Hello, and welcome to The Backstory. Tonight, we're going to tell the backstory on the unseen costs of child care and the implications for child care and the cost of child care for our local economy and the stability of our workforce. My name's Tim Waters, and as a volunteer for Longmont Public Media, I get to host this program, which gives me a chance to interview guests like I'm going to have a chance to interview this evening, who I'll have the pleasure of introducing in just a moment. To talk about, to actually do storytelling, to share stories of what's happening in the community that at least I think are relevant and interesting, and I hope you will as well. We're coming to you tonight as we do the last Monday of every month, although this is the third Monday of the month, isn't it? Next week is Labor Day, or Memorial Day. So we're coming to you a week earlier this month from beautiful downtown Longmont, the Longmont Public Media Studios. We have a live studio audience this evening, and so to the audience members who are with us, when we get 40 minutes or so into the hour, if audience members have questions that they'd like to participate in this conversation, they're going to be invited to join us if they have them. And if you're not in the studio audience tonight, you're missing a good time down here in Longmont. So think about next month when we're going to be talking about the second of a two-part series. Tonight's the first part. We're going to be talking about problems, challenges, not necessarily solutions to the unforeseen costs of child care and its impact on the economy. So we'll come back to the questions about solutions and options. But tonight, I have three women who are gainfully employed, running businesses, high-level, high-profile executive jobs in and around Longmont. Most of you are going to know who they are because of what they do. And each of them has their own story about how they've continued to stay in the workplace, earn a living for their families, and manage all the implications of being a mom at the same time that they're professional women. So Sarah Morgan is the owner of Martini Bistros, Bistro, right? Everybody in town knows martinis. So Sarah, thank you. I know this is a tough time for you in particular, probably peak moment in your restaurant. So yes. Thank you for what you do day in and day out, but thanks for being here tonight and sharing this story. Absolutely. Amy Ashenbrenner. I've known Amy for a number of years here, but as the director of the Realtors Association, and just recently has made some transition to a maybe a less frenetic job, but still in the real estate business with Boulder.
Bolo Realtors.
Bolo Realtors. And Jessica Erickson, who is now the Director of Business Development with Sun Construction. Jessica and I have worked together for a number of years when she was the Director of the Longmont Economic Development Partnership and has now made this transition to Sun Construction and their business development. So, ladies, that's as much as I'm going to try to talk less, have you talk more. Let's get started with just those introductions. I'd like you to start by sharing with our listeners your stories. Sarah, if we could just start with you and you'll just kind of work around the table. Help us get to know you, your background, your professional life, and what brings you into this conversation.
So I started as a general manager for Martini's Bistro in 2018. This is my 25th year in the restaurant industry. And so 25 years and looking at me like, clearly, like I started very early in the restaurant industry.
Yeah, you were just a baby.
Pretty much. I was 13 when I got my first job in the restaurant industry.
You really were a baby.
I really was. And so I did dishes and bus tables and made salads. This was never my life goal, to be a restaurant owner by any means. The restaurant industry was always a lily pad for me. I could jump in, jump out. And for our cultural society-wise, the restaurant industry is that for a lot of people. It's a very transient industry. And so like most of us in this industry, I did the restaurant while I was always trying to leave the restaurant. So I got my associates in nursing. I got my bachelor's degree in equine science and pre-vet. I did ranching for a while. I was a art consultant for a while. I've been all around, like, really the professional world. And, I definitely have the how hard could it be gene. So whatever industry I get in, I'm bound and determined. I'm going to be great at it. I'm going to figure it out. And when I was graduating from CSU with my degree in equine science and pre-vet, at that point, I was 30 and really felt like at that At that point, I've been married for about 7 years, and I was really ready to start trying to have children. And so when I graduated CSU, I was pregnant with my first child, and I decided not to go on to vet school. And then considering at that point, during my last 2 years at CSU, I was managing a wine bar in Fort Collins and had left that and just moved over to Chimney Park, which at that point is one of the top 100 restaurants in the country. And I've always loved fine dining. I'm a second level somm and so sommelier. So moving over to Chimney Park was really a ton of fun. I made really good money in a little bit of time. And so I was at Chimney Park through my pregnancy. And that was really my goal, was to maintain that job so then I could work at night and still be at home with my baby during the day. I always wanted children. I always wanted to be a mom. And I've always had this mentality that professionally I didn't need to lessen myself so I could be a mother. And I don't believe I need to be less of a mother so I could be a professional. And so I felt like at that point in my life, it was a really good fit. But then a week after I had my daughter, my husband at the time had lost his job and I had to get back to the corporate world. I needed more everything, more sustainability, we need security. And so I'd gotten into the franchising industry. And that was my first time in the franchising industry. I had never really acknowledged how large of an industry it was. Any kind of concept or industry, you can really bounce around within franchising. And so I was on the restaurant side, and I was doing quick service or fast food restaurants. I was a franchise development coordinator. And it was everything that I needed for my family. I made good money. I had a lot of upwards mobility. I traveled a ton. But I started this job when my daughter was 6 weeks old. And so I was still nursing. I was still very postpartum. And I had to put all that aside because I had a family to support. And I never really gave myself space to accept or even consider, like, did I have any kind of postpartum depression? How was I feeling about being a mother? How was I getting to be the mom I wanted to be? Absolutely not. I knew I was very sad about that, but just kind of put it in a box and move forward. And I had to be the best I could be because I had a lot on the line. And I did, that was right at the time where we had hired a new VP of HR for Taco John's, and she was so progressive. She was very much about the satellite working, and you know, and I leaned into that hard. Really, as a franchise development coordinator, I could do my job anywhere as long as I had a cell phone, internet connection, and my computer. And so, especially with as much as I was traveling for work, when I started to ask for more of that balance for me, at least, can I work at home so I can be with my baby a little bit more? The demographic and the overall or majority demographic for the office wasn't so supportive of that. I was definitely the youngest one in my office and getting a lot of pushback because culturally that's not how they did it. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely, especially now being an employer, I understand the hesitation for it. And still this day, I do definitely believe that there's some needed balance and boundaries in order to be an effective parent and working from home and still trying to be around your child. That's a whole nother ball game. But I begged for that. And I did get a lot more flexibility with my schedule. At least I wasn't needing to be in the office every day. But still, nonetheless, it was a major strain on me as a mom, as me as a parent, and definitely on me, like on my family. And so I did that job until that job ended, and it kind of left me, at that point, I had just had my second child and was definitely acknowledging it's probably going to be my last. And so I wanted to take as long of a maternity leave as I could at that point. And I was a little bit more in a secure place professionally with the same company at that point. And so I took the full 3 months, and then that all that responsibility with that, needing to be able to afford taking 3 months off of work and making that happen. But got it together, and it was good. And then eventually that when I did get back from maternity leave, it wasn't long until that my position was dissolved anyways. We were going through a big leadership change. And so then after that, I was like, you know what, this is okay. I have a new farm. I have both my children. I can ride horses at my place and just figure out life. And I'm finally going to be able to be the parent I want to be. And that was on Friday when my job ended. And then on Monday, I had a really bad accident that landed me in a wheelchair for about 8 weeks and physical therapy for 20 weeks. And so I was still actively interviewing for other jobs within the franchising industry. I'd been really successful in my position. But now that I couldn't travel so easily, I was not a candidate for the positions. And so quickly, like, the interest in me kind of died off. And it landed me back on this side of the restaurant industry. And it was, you know, one of the greatest things ever to happen, because it put me right back where I am happiest. And it gave me the most flexibility, again, to be with my children. Now, the money and the income was obviously different, and so that took a little readjusting and figuring that out. But I was back to working later afternoons and into the evenings when my children were sleeping. I had coverage at home. I was still married at the time, so I had coverage at home to watch them while I was working. But during the day and, you know, the weekends, I could really rearrange my schedule to work or be a little bit more accommodating to being a parent. So I started working at Martini's in 2018 as the general manager. And then my life happened to where I was able to buy it in 2020. And it was just an incredible opportunity. And that's where I realized the stewardship of now being an employer. It was really on me to build the culture of, for my employees, what did I want for them? And realizing how much I wanted to be at home with my children. I liked the restaurant industry because of the flexibility it afforded me. How can I offer this to more industry professionals that have children, that don't feel like their whole life needs to be for work? They can come in, they can make good money, they can have benefits, and they can still have coverage for their children when they need it. And so that's really what I have developed Martini's, and my managing company is Service LLC. So Service LLC is now comprised of industry professionals. A majority of us are parents, or nonetheless, we have active interests that we like to explore outside of work, and we cover each other appropriately for that. Some of my proudest moments in the restaurant is when I have an employee with a new baby, and she's got to come in and bring the baby, and that baby will go on my chest while she goes and does something. And so I've got the baby carrier, and we're vacuuming, and we've got a playpen set up in the office, and I'm proud to be able to do that. But that's really where I feel like as a culture, we've gotten away from that. But the more conversations I have about this, I realize how many people are very flexible and open and accommodating. Whereas I feel like we've kind of taken that almost 1950s mentality of, oh no, babies won't come around, babies don't need to be heard. But I believe that if you want to support the workforce, you support the family, and it raises the children into the workforce. We become a better society. They learn about work ethic and responsibility, which I do think a lot of our generations right now are having major issues with that. And so I feel like because of this neglect that we've almost adopted as being okay with our children, it's really kind of starting to eat at us culturally. So I'm excited to have some effect to try to change that. And there's nothing that makes me more proud than to have my children at work with me, and people know my children, and they bus tables and they pour water, and my guests luckily don't mind much, but I also have to manage how much, whole environment, but it works.
Well, we're going to come back to, I have a question here about creativity, and okay. You've begun to open up some of that, but I want to come back to that, to what are the creative approaches occurring now, right, that you can just go with on your own in whatever your workplace is, but we'll come back to that theme. Amy, tell us about you.
Well, that's actually a great segue to Amy. Thank you, because I think I bring a little bit more of a elder
No, I bring the elder to this table.
Well, I'm a native of Boulder. I grew up on a ranch right outside of Rocky Flats. Once I finished schooling, I didn't go far. I ended up in hygiene, bought a farm there, started a life that I thought that I was going to have, raising children. I have three children. When my youngest was, almost 3 years old, for her birthday, my husband divorced me. So I did not have any professional experience at that point. I'd worked odd jobs while I was in school and whatnot. But now I found myself with three children, youngest being three, the oldest being eight, a farm with a mortgage, no health insurance, and no income. So what do, right? Fortunately for me, the words of raised by a village came to play, because out in the farm community, it is a village. I was, by the grace of God, given an opportunity to work in the office at Keter Trucking in Boulder, Colorado, and I flourished. And it was a fabulous experience, except for when it came for being a mom. I didn't have to worry about daycare at that point because I had neighbors around me. But what I was not able to do was go to school functions, to go to doctor's appointments, because there was that mindset back then with the employers, and this is what would be told of me. I don't know, how important is your job, right? My son suffered a broken bone up at Keystone, and they called and I had to go to the hospital and whatnot, and when I'm walking out the door, the boss at the time says to me, well, you will be back this afternoon, right? So I worked through that. I went, got a different job. I keep moving up, bettering myself. During that time period, my children are learning responsibility, and that's what plays in so key with you. My older two children knew that they had to come home from school. Everybody had to sit down and do homework. They had to get chores done, and then they had to get dinner started, and then there was the little one to take care of, right? Then it got to the point where I did have to get daycare for the little one. I couldn't afford daycare. There was nothing out there that was available. So by asking around, here was the situation. I made too much money to qualify for this, right? Mm-hmm. Just, and it was like $5 or $10. Thankfully, the YMCA, and they had a fabulous program. Going through that, we'll just fast forward because I could go on forever. I have three of the most outstanding children in the world. My son holds a master's in secondary education. School education was very important in our family. My daughter, Samantha, the middle child, is started working for the Department of Corrections with the state of Colorado at 21. Then my youngest daughter, Cheyenne, is in the healthcare. She does home healthcare. I was very fortunate throughout the years to be able to take all the experiences that I had at the different jobs that I had to not only further my education, which I worked on every night. This is, my children were teaching me how to use a computer, because that was before computers were readily available. And thankfully, the St. Vrain Valley School District were introducing computers to the children at Hygiene Elementary. So I saved and saved and saved and bought, you know, one of those great big old computers. And every night after the two younger ones would go to bed, my son would teach me how to use Excel and Word, because I knew I had to have that, right? It was going to get to that point. So we'll fast forward. I went to work for the Realtor Association 24 years ago, the Longmont Association of Realtors. I started as an administrative assistant. I worked my way up to the CEO of the association. But the entire time I was doing that, every missed opportunity that I had with being able to be the mom that I wanted to be, never got to be, what's that called, the mom, the home schoolroom mom or whatever it is, or take cupcakes or go on the field trips. I always told myself that when I got to a position where I was the boss, I was never going to allow that to happen. So I created that same atmosphere. I have a fabulous, fabulous woman that's worked for me for years. I think we're going on almost 10 years now. It was, here's what my rules are. You have a doctor's appointment, your child has a doctor's appointment, go do it. There's no counting off the time that you worked, right? Docking you time, you're still gonna get paid. You're gonna get paid the same exact amount. Take care of those children. Your child calls, they're sick, they need to go home and take care of your child. I firmly believe that when you create that culture, that employee, for the most part, I've had a few that took advantage, but for the most part, they will give you back tenfold because of what you've done. We had a rule in my house with my kids when they were little. Do not call mom at work unless you're bleeding profusely or a bone is sticking out, because I couldn't leave. And then I had to run around, try to find somebody that could go take care of them.
Jessica?
That's interesting, because that's a good segue. Like, this order was great. Unplanned, I'm assuming, but
no, really strategic.
So I actually grew up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, in a household where my mother was the primary breadwinner, oftentimes the only breadwinner, which at the time in the age myself 80s and early 90s was not as common as it is today. It's almost half of households today. But and so I watched her try to do all of the things while working full-time and supporting our family, and baking the cupcakes in the middle of the night, and missing some of the events and activities, and never being the mom in my classroom. And so I think I pretty early on decided that I was not going to prioritize having children, having a family, because I didn't want that for my life, what I had seen my mom had have to struggle with for my life. So 2002, I moved to Colorado and relatively quickly found my way into an economic development office, and really, and I discovered not only my profession, but my passion that sustained for the next 20 years, and has allowed me to, as we were talking about before, have a pretty exciting life, because it was just me. I was on my own. I was doing well. I had this great profession that provided me a lot of flexibility, but was also very demanding, as you know. And then in so found my way through that career path to running the Longmont Economic Development Partnership, starting in 2015. So for 8 years, I ran the Longmont Economic Development Partnership. But I started here in February of 2015. In May of 2015, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was 37 years old, and I was told that the treatment that I was going to have to undergo as a result of breast cancer would 100% of the time affects fertility. And I was told that if I had any thought or consideration of ever wanting to be a mother, that I should take measures in advance of treatment to preserve my fertility. And so for the first time in my life, I was faced with this motherhood being taken from me. I wasn't making a conscious choice not to pursue it anymore. It was being taken from me. And so that's where I said, you know, I think I actually do want to do this. And at 37, about to go through breast cancer treatment, odds are slim, but went through treatment and kind of aftercare. And then my partner and I were fortunate enough to conceive naturally and have a perfectly healthy, against all odds, perfectly healthy, normal, though high risk pregnancy, and have a beautiful baby girl of all days on March 12th of 2020. So if anyone wants to know the exact number of days ago that the pandemic started, I can always tell you that. And she's 3 years old now, and she's incredible, and she's thriving. But all of the sacrifices that you've talked about, and all of the sacrifices that you've talked about, are ones that I have to make every day as well. And I think all of us have to make. I'm right in that position that I told myself I didn't want to be in. I'm the primary breadwinner for my household and for my family, and every single day having to make here or there decisions. What's in the best interest of the long-term, you know, health and safety and wellness and financial stability of my family versus the time and energy and effort I get to put into being the mother that I want to be. And a lot of that impacted my decision to move from, you know, a career I had enjoyed and been very, arguably very successful at for 20 years into something different and new and foreign, because it provided me with more consistency of schedule and stability and flexibility and financial stability than what my previous career had.
Well, having crossed your path a number of times, yeah. I you said arguably, I would say inarguable, you were successful. And I'm mindful right now, first of all, all three of your stories, obviously unique to you. But there are some patterns here, and I want to make certain we pull out some of those patterns, because they're patterns, I think, not just for you, but for moms, working moms, or wannabe working moms, right, who are dealing with some of the same issues. Mm-hmm. And I don't want, my fear is that I'm going to kind of begin to frame this on the negative side, because there's so much positive that you've just shared. But there are some challenges, right? Can we just, let's call out the sacrifices and the challenges. You know, what are the constraints that we all ought to understand that talented people just like you, just happen to be all three of you women, really talented, successful women, are doing this because you're able to work around or overcome mm-hmm. some of those challenges. Let's just put those, really kind of make them really visible for a few minutes. Yeah. Reiterate, you've touched on them.
Yeah.
Sacrifice what you can and can't do. I want to make certain we tell the story about what you're challenged with now, so then we talk about how we might relieve some of those yeah. burdens later, we're clear on what we're trying to relieve.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't mind, I was fortunate to participate in an event that you had with Governor Polis around early childhood care and education policy in Colorado, and had the opportunity to speak at that event. So we just kind of revisit, and I don't want to speak for anyone else at the table, anyone else in the room, but I want to kind of check my privilege and say I am one of the fortunate ones, because I, you know, the cost, you know, one of the biggest challenges of childcare. My household income is around 150% of the area median, and childcare costs are about 12% of my income, wow. my household income. So if you consider someone at the median or below the median, at the median, that same childcare cost would be 17 or 18% of their household income. That's a mortgage, right? So I, again, consider myself fortunate that while it's a squeeze, let's make this clear, it's nearly $2,000 a month that we pay for childcare. It's a squeeze for my family, but I have the ability to do that, and so have the highest quality, best available childcare for my daughter that people in a different situation don't have. I have to drive from my home in central Longmont to northeast Longmont, back to kind of southwest Longmont, from home to childcare to work, so transportation. But again, I'm fortunate. I have a vehicle, a reliable vehicle, that I have the ability to do that, to take my daughter to daycare and get to work on time and regularly every day. Not everybody has that privilege or that good fortune. You talked about, you know, flexibility of the work environment. There are some jobs that just don't allow for the level of flexibility that mine certainly does. So that, you know, my ability to go to work every day is dependent not only on my health and my daughter's health, but also on the health of our nanny and the health of her family. And so if there are one of those days where, you know, we're healthy but they're not, and I can't get my daughter to childcare, I have the ability to work from home. It often requires that I get up 2 hours before her and stay up 2 hours after her to get the work done that needs to get done for that day. But I have that ability, and I have that option, and I have that good fortune to be in that position. So I do think cost, accessibility, so where childcare centers, quality, affordable childcare centers are located, transportation, all of those things are challenges. And then workplace flexibility, all of those things are challenges that are so critical to be addressed as part of this conversation, and not for people like me, but for people who aren't as fortunate as me to be able to manage those things.
Yeah, great. I'm going to come back. We'll circle back on a couple of points you made, but I want to invite Amy and Sarah into this as well.
Well, then I can, and Jessica gives a example of a very small percentage of whether it be mothers, fathers, or partners or families in a whole. The bigger picture we all need to focus on, not only at the local level but the state level, is those that make up the majority, which right. are the ones that basically, the bottom line is, they're going to work to pay for daycare.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very sad thing, with the hopes that they will continue to advance so that when they get to that point where they don't need the daycare, you know, then, you know, financially things will be a little bit more stable. I also would love to see there be the conversation and the mindset with all employers everywhere that there has to be that work-life balance. And I think that's one of the points where we're missing really talented workers out there, because they can't come to work. It's not that they don't want to, yep, but they can't. And then the one other thing, because I could go on forever, as Tim knows, the transportation part of this. Because there is so much conversation at the local and state level about not driving, you tell me, how is a working parent supposed to do a trip such as what Jessica mm-hmm. just talked about?
It would be impossible.
On public transportation. With not only your briefcase that holds your computer, but the diaper bag, the baby, the car seat, whatever else that you have to have with you. It's a broad conversation.
So, we're just kind of adding up the workarounds, what the challenges, the hurdles. Sarah, what would you add to this?
The emotional and physical warfare of parenthood in general, and then to have just the stress and the higher you are in the workplace, the more stress is on you. And there, what support do we have for that? We really just push it under a rug. We've all been there. We've all done it. And it's just really, I'm torn down today, yeah, having to make the decision of leaving my screaming, crying child that wants to be on my side, yeah, with her grandmother, because I have to go to work. And not to say I want to slack on my responsibilities with work, but right now I'm having to not be the comfort and the nurturer and the 100% person that I was biologically geared to be at that moment, because I had to make the decision for my employer. That's where I always go back to culturally. I feel like culturally we've just become so centered on economic growth, financial growth, growth of the company, growth of your finances, growth, growth, growth. We all think that we need to have the biggest house and the best car. And it's can we just focus on being happy? What do you need to be happy? That doesn't require the material. If we did that, could we kind of back off on always needing that growth? What happens if we just are happy with sustainability and getting to enjoy company and a work-life balance?
So we've talked about the unforeseen costs. Well, these are, what you've just identified, are not unforeseen.
Right.
Some of the emotional toll that you've just described is part of that unforeseen cost. But I just want to go back to the to the number. You mentioned $2,000 a month.
$1,850.
I was rounding up. The average cost for full-time, for one child, average full-time cost for childcare right now in Longmont, it's $21,000 a year, mm-hmm, right? So your numbers are right, kind of spot, yeah, on. And that's if you earn enough, right, and you have the options, right? That was your reference, yeah, to privilege and, yeah, and the opportunity to have the means to do some of that, yeah, working around. There are some other numbers, and these are not mine. There's a member of our audience who is tonight who's done the research on this, so I'm going to cite her work. $8.3 billion of lost wages right now annually in America, because of men and women who would like to be in the workplace and can't. Some of that goes to, the stresses, the economic stresses that come with it. Over the next 10 years, $1 trillion over the next 10 years of productivity will be lost because of the number of moms and dads who can't be in the workplace, who just don't have the means or the support, even as little as it's been, for you to do the kind of workarounds that you've been able to do. Just to kind of make the point that what you've described is true here, and it's true, at some scale. Now, all that said, the three of you have been creative, right? So no matter what anybody else does, as you described, Sarah, an employee bringing their child in, and you're caring for the child as they're doing something else. Talk a little bit about the kind of the creative things, not the dark side of this, and not dependent upon anybody else, right, to come up with a solution. We're going to talk about solutions in another one of these sessions. What are the examples of what you've been able to create as options for yourselves, for your employees, and for your family members, right, given the challenges of finding places and affording those, being able to afford the places where you want to put your kids?
So when I started to work, when my daughter was 6 weeks old, I was really fortunate enough at that point that my mother-in-law was willing to move from Florida to Colorado, and she got a house just around the corner from us. It was a beautiful thing how it all worked out. But so for the first year of my daughter's life, it was my mother-in-law being able to take care of her when I was at work. And then once I had a second child, we definitely needed a larger house. And so we decided to combine our incomes and become a multi-generational household. And so you would speak more to this than anybody, but I think that's a really amazing cultural movement that we've had the last 10, 15 years of more multi-generational households. That has been great because it's obviously given care and lessened the financial responsibility on my mother-in-law being of an older age, but then it's also given me the care for my daughter at home, so, and then with my son. So we weren't needing to pay out what would have been almost $4,000, especially to have an infant in daycare is significantly more expensive than having an older child or a toddler. And so that saved us $4,000 a month, but was able to also, like I said, financially benefit my mother-in-law. In my business, yes, I've had points where obviously I couldn't legally like write it down, like looking for a new mother for this position, but I had office things that I needed done. I needed an executive assistant essentially. And I knew a person that would just be fantastic for the job. And she had just had a new baby and she was kind of scrambling about how I could just sympathize of where she was. And I was like, bring him in. Set up the playpen. Take the time you want. We put a chair in the office so she could breastfeed as she needed to. She had the ability to still be a mom and get the job done. And she did a fantastic job. She was so loyal. She was so dedicated. She was so happy in her workplace. She felt effective. She felt like she could grow. And I was really excited to be able to offer that for her. Now being divorced, now I live over my restaurant. So I have an apartment above my restaurant. And so I can't tell you how often my children are upstairs. Somebody else's children also need to be upstairs because we didn't have enough staff to give them the night off. So it's like, okay, we're essentially have a daycare upstairs and like four kids running around and eating applesauce and chicken tenders. And we're shuttling up and down the stairs, checking in on them. It's a really beautiful thing. Yeah, it's a little stressful. Yes, it's another element to manage with work, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's so healthy. They're almost latchkey kids with better supervision. I was definitely a latchkey kid, so I can sympathize with it, but it's just like they're doing well. So we've gotten creative, and it's I think it eases, especially regardless whether you're a mother or you're a father, if you're a dedicated parent, that emotional weight and stress of, am I doing it right? Is it, am I screwing my child up? Or are we all thriving right now? And I'm happy to say that I think majority of my staff at least would 95% of the time say we're thriving as parents, being able to thrive as professionals.
And part of that is really the collaboration, what you've done with that workplace.
It's the village.
Yeah.
And you know, I was very fortunate as my children got a little older in the elementary school age. I became great friends with another divorced mother of three who was actually in the real estate industry, which I was not at that point. We worked out a very simple deal. Neither one of us could afford to pay somebody, right? So her kids would come home on the school bus to my house and then be there through dinner, sometimes until 10 p.m. She would pick them up, and then when my kids had appointments during the day, she was able to take them to those appointments. Neither one of us had to pay the other one to be able to do either one. Those are, I think, really great ideas that today's families aren't utilizing that village mantra. And maybe it's because they don't know who's in their neighborhoods. I've never lived in town. I don't know what it's like to have neighbors around you. So, you know, I think in my little fantasy world, everybody has really great, you know, neighbors, which I know is not always the case. But it's that solution right there. And that, I agree with you. When I first became the boss, I wanted to put an ad in the paper for a single mom. And of course, the attorney quickly told me I could not do that. Why can't you do that? But, and why can't we do that? Why have we created the stigma? And that's another part of this conversation as well, is the stigma. You chose to be a mom. You made the decision. I don't know how many times I heard that.
Yeah. Jessica, you want to add to this? In terms of creative.
Yeah, I mean, I think very similarly, you know, I was fortunate as the CEO of Longmont Economic Development Partnership to put some policies in place for my staff long before I was a mother, started our discretionary leave policy, which was basically take the time off that you need to have balance and take care of your family. So same without feeling that you're going to be penalized or lose wages or not be able to financially support your family if you take the time off that you need to do so, or even to just go on vacation with them, refresh and recharge with your family and have that business. And so I had multiple employees take advantage of that and, you know, travel the world with their kids and come back just absolutely refreshed and much better, more productive, more energized employees for it, and also more worldly, which was kind of critical for the work that we were doing. So that, and then certainly once I had my daughter, same thing, set up the play area, you saw it in my office, TP table, arts and crafts supplies and toys all over the place, and so many, you know, afternoons and evenings spent in the office with my little one, just making it work.
Yeah. So I think the answer to this question is yes, but I'll ask it and then unpack it a little bit, drill down. Are you in conversations with other parents, other working parents, moms, dads, in your professional spheres, who are dealing with the same kinds of issues?
I have a child that's going through these issues.
So, I know you're not a spokesperson for others,
right?
But what are you hearing from your kids, your colleagues, your associates?
You know, my daughter has a 3-year-old special needs, which makes daycare even more expensive, mm-hmm. right? And it was that whole trying to create how, Mom, I need to go to work. Financially, I need to go to work. But almost everything I make's going towards this daycare,
yeah.
right? And fortunately, it's worked out for her because she's in the home health care profession. She works at night when the little one's asleep and whatnot, and then she's found a fabulous, wonderful daycare setting that they actually call it school, and it's only for special needs. But it's that difficulty of, it would be great if everybody had it easier to find daycare, easier to do the, to be able to afford it, mm-hmm. but that's just not the reality. And seeing it firsthand with my daughter, because it's different from when I had children.
Sure.
And you talk about latchkey kids. When my son received his master's, that's what his speech was. That thankfully, because he had a mother that was single and raised 3 children and taught him the hard work ethics, how to do housework, how to do cook dinners, how to take care of siblings, he was able to achieve his accomplishments. So
I'm in some moms groups on social media where there's a lot of conversation around childcare, and then the number of conversations around, you know, where can I find childcare that I can afford and that is accessible and available to me based on my schedule. Not everybody in 2023 works 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, but that's when childcare is available, because childcare providers also have families that they want to go home to in the evening and spend their weekends with. So how do we address the challenge of accessibility for all, regardless of kind of what your schedule is or what your profession is, to be able to access childcare? And then the number of conversations around, how do I work from home and care for my child at the same time? And the fact that that's even a necessary conversation is just so devastating. I don't think anybody should be in that position where they have to find a way to simultaneously work from home
And I think a lot of times the conversation is, oh, the pandemic provided for this opportunity for us to be able to work from home and have our kids there at the same time. That is no kind of opportunity, and that is no kind of life that anybody should aspire to or have to be put into. There need to be options for people of all walks of life and in all situations and in all kind of scenarios.
So what are the implications? What are your observations about the workforce more, you know, more broadly conceptualized or thought about? And this idea of working at home as either a requirement or as an attraction or as the opposite. The relationship between childcare and recruitment and stability of the workforce. What's for you, especially for you too, as you're recruiting, and I don't know if, Amy, you're recruiting employees right now, but the implications for recruitment and development and sustaining a workforce given the challenges of childcare, what are the challenges there?
It's just the loss of incredible talent that I can't. I have friends who are just incredible restaurant industry professionals, and I cannot get them back into their workforce because of the childcare issue, because of how expensive, because of how, you know, financially our industry really works. It's feast or famine throughout the year, and so it's a lot. And so they've just chosen not to rejoin the workforce after having children, or they try to go find another industry to pursue. And it's kind of sad because they made a good amount of money in the restaurant industry. To see them leave to go take half because they get a better schedule for daycare, it worked a little better logistically with children, or, you know, the healthcare costs, something. It's just, it's hard. It makes it really difficult.
And that's part of the conversation, I think, is that there's a lot of industry out there, including mine, where we can't pay what they can get at other places. And that may be the whole package, right? Health insurance, the salary or by hour wage or whatnot. So they're either choosing not to get back into the workforce, which is so very sad because there's a lot of extremely intelligent and talented people out there that are not working, that want to work. They just can't make it happen. Or they are going into a line of work that they absolutely hate. And there's nothing worse than working someplace that you hate.
So just one observation. You're talking about the restaurant industry specifically, but when you look at the availability of childcare and it primarily being, you know, that kind of 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and where it is available earlier or later or on the weekends, it's more expensive. But when you consider who's working the earlier, the overnight, the weekend, those are not the highest wage paying jobs that are out there. So it's just this double-edged sword, and also reverse mentality of what it should be in order to create a sustainable and affordable childcare system for everyone. I forgot what else I was going to say.
Well, if there's any audience members who would like to ask a question, I'm going to ask them to come over here now. But I'm going to ask one more question as somebody makes their way there. And if there's no one there, we're just going to keep going on with the conversation. Here's the question I'd like to follow on with. We're talking about problems tonight, right? Mm-hmm. And the challenges. A month from now, we're going to talk about solutions. Mm-hmm. What would you want? Anybody who's thinking about addressing some of the challenges or the issues, what would you want them to thinking about doing and not doing? Like, make certain we cover these bases and make certain you don't make these mistakes.
I would like to see that there is an affordable child care option out there for all. Mm-hmm. For all. It serves multiple purposes. Yeah. One, so that we can get our workforce back up and working. And two, so that we can prepare these children to start kindergarten with knowledge.
I'll come in just a minute. Go ahead.
So I actually have some very strong opinions on this topic. I've been part of a lot of conversations over the last few years in terms of just based on my position with Longmont UDP and the relationship with you and the city of Longmont. But a few things that have struck me with all of those conversations that I think are maybe some unintended misses on the part of the people that are having those conversations and driving those conversations and the resulting policy that is intended to be helpful that isn't always. Like 10 hours of free preschool is not helpful. Just throwing that out there. I appreciate the intention and the effort that was put into. It's useless to most of the people that need.
Could we just pause right there? Mm-hmm. Just so folks know, you're talking about the universal pre-K program.
Yes, the universal pre-K program.
Which some may think of. It was a governor's initiative supported by the legislature and supported by the public.
Yeah.
But the mindset that somehow that
it's
solves
a
problem
is
misunderstood.
Yeah. Yeah. And so from that, we have an entire economic system in this country that's based on the idea of a nuclear family that was irrelevant almost as soon as it was conceived of. And so everything from the way suburban housing development, transportation systems that are intended to transport an individual from one place to another, usually a man from home to work and work to home, as well as obviously childcare and even K through 12 education. All of these systems are based on this idea of a nuclear family that, again, has not been relevant since it was conceived of. None of us, none of our stories, and I would venture to guess most of the stories of the people in this room and the people that might be watching this are that of a nuclear family. And so we need to throw that out as the basis or the foundation for how policies around things like childcare and education and housing development and transportation are talked about. And then I think if a municipality like or government entity, whether it be the state or the municipality or the county, is really serious about making childcare a priority, that priority has to be ubiquitous across the organization. So everybody down to the clerk at the planning counter has to understand that childcare is a priority for this city and is a priority within their job and has to be directed to address projects related to childcare as priority, as such. So businesses that are building new facilities that include childcare, residential development that are including childcare facilities within the bounds of that development, or childcare centers themselves should be placed at higher priority when you're considering things like planning and permitting and all of the things that have to go through. There's a little drop-in daycare facility just down the street on 3rd and Lashley that has just started a GoFundMe page because their construction and permitting has been so delayed. They now fear that they're not going to be able to open with some additional financial resources. So are there things that the city could have done at the very bottom level of services to be able to make that a little easier path for them in order to create that resource that's going to be of huge benefit to someone like myself who often needs that earlier or later? And then I've said this before, I'll say it again in every room that I get to have this conversation in, do not have policy conversations around childcare and early childhood education. Do not make it about us without us. So none of those conversations should be had without having actual parents who are having that lived experience today as part of that conversation. I think that's where you end up with bad policy, well-intended bad policy, because you're not including the people that are being impacted in those conversations. And part of that means consider childcare when you're planning your events and your conversations and your meetings to have those conversations. Is there on-site childcare available? Are you having them at convenient hours for working parents who need to consider childcare? I had to make special arrangements for this
evening. To be here tonight? Yeah,
absolutely.
So
I almost brought her with me. So that would be, the final thing. Just don't make it about us without us when you're having these policy conversations.
Sounds like you've been thinking about this.
A little bit.
Any other comments?
One of my concerns about having this conversation was the talk about affordable childcare. And as much as I love the sound of that, I also probably would not utilize it. It scares me so much for affordable childcare. Yes, I want it obviously to be cheaper and easier on my finances, but affordable childcare, that's still a business at the end of the day. That means a lower wage for the people taking care of my children. And that's what.
And I agree with you on that. So maybe the choice of verbiage was wrong. But it would be more along the lines of something like what Jessica was talking about.
This topic of affordability and how to make it things affordable or subsidized, that's going to be on the table.
Okay.
We have a question.
First of all, thank you. You've all given me great insights into this whole topic and a lot of interesting stories. The first thing is, you talked about the life-work balance. And all of you have been in many, many different jobs, many different industries. Do you find that the life-work balance is getting worse or getting better?
I personally, and seeing my mother as a single mom and my grandparents, culturally, I can see where us having so many conversations about the work-life balance, it's now becoming more of a forefront of or top of mind thinking for a lot of people. For the employee, for what they're looking for, what kind of jobs and professions they're looking for, and then for the employer as well. Realizing that if you really do try to honor the work-life balance, then you, end result, normally have a lower turnover of your staff. Which is going to increase your economic efficiency. So I think that we're getting better with the work-life balance the more conversations we have about it.
Yeah, the fact that it's even a term and that we're having that conversation. Yeah. Like, my mom worked in the insurance industry for 25 years, and nobody there in her office was talking about work-life balance or gave a care about whether or not her work and her life were balanced. And, you know, for me, I work for a relatively large company that has, and part of the reason I'm there is because they place a priority on family values. And so that is definitely a benefit, a value add to. And again, I think, as we've said, makes me a better, more productive, more balanced, mentally and psychologically balanced employee for them as well.
Cheryl, you may have more questions. We're at the end of this hour.
Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
And I only got to half my questions. This is a great panel. Maybe we'll have more opportunity to talk about, to re-engage on this topic, on what the problems are. But I just want to tell you how much I appreciate, again, your being here tonight, what you do every day, and your contributions to this community. And we're going to be smarter walking out of this room tonight about the challenges working moms and dads face. In fact, we would have had a fourth panelist here tonight, a single dad with a disabled child in a setting. He couldn't work out childcare tonight to be with us. So if we had helped him with that, he might have been able to make it. But that's just an example of what we're talking about. So the challenges are daunting. I don't think they're insurmountable. And Longmonters, on June 26th, we're going to be back here to talk about solutions in the Longmont Public Studio at 6 p.m. on June 26th. Join us. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.